This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
What's up, nerds? The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Here's the thing of COVID. You have to, like, set your own shot here. Hold on a second. Hold on. Am I moving in the right direction? I am. Look at that, Raj. What else can I do? What can I do? I can star on the show, produce it, frame my shot. What else? You want me to juggle while I'm doing all this stuff?
Yeah.
Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, and you can be a part of Max Kellerman Nation. I have a nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-SAY-ESPN. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back. So is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. But first, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. The Dolphins are naming Tua Tagovailoa their starting quarterback, a league source tells ESPN. I'm going to get into that. I'm going to get into the Cowboys. I'm going to get into the fact that Lomachenko and Lopez did a monster number on TV, just showing you put on the fights and they will watch. But I need to start with the headline today, Raj. It was a tremendous victory for me in our DraftKings league this week. And I know people want to hear about Tua and the Dallas Cowboys and such, but I really feel that we should begin this show with an analysis of what went right for me on DraftKings this week, Raj, because I certainly dusted
you. You really going to do this?
Yeah.
You really going to do this?
I think the people need to know. Look, I didn't see a lot of people talking about Kyler Murray as the quarterback to take this week. It was so obvious. That Dallas secondary. Come on, not to mention the yards he's going to get on the ground. It was obvious. And yet, I alone in our league took Kyler Murray. So I think congratulations to me are in order. Raj, would you like to congratulate me on my win? Thank you.
Mr. Kellerman, what did it take for you to put together? First, there's questions from the press, of course. Where were you when you did this magnificent lineup? Were you in the bathroom? Were you driving?
A full team effort from the front office on down. You know, a lot of thought went into it. A lot of lineup changes before kickoff. A lot of analysis. And we came together as an organization, Notorious QBR. That's the organization. Okay. And that's how we got the victory. You know, we're
one
on
more
to next
from
week.
The press.
Yeah.
Mr. Kellerman, yeah. Do you expect to repeat?
Well, you know, we take it one game at a time. It's, as you know, it's going to be a brand new lineup. It's daily fantasy, DraftKings. And you know, there's a lot of competition. Raj Grobes. We got who else? We got Ben Lyons and Bill Wolf. Mason. We got Nick Tutz, Steve Mason in the league. We got a lot of competitors in the league, and we're going to be taking this one week at a time.
Okay, so, that'll be all questions.
That was Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. Straight Talk is about my fantasy team. I deserve it. I'm gonna reverse it. I'm going to get to Tua, but let me start with the Dallas Cowboys. You know what the Dallas Cowboys were in this recent iteration of their franchise with Dak Prescott as quarterback, and it even predates Dak. They were a team who put their draft picks where their mouth is, right? Everyone likes to pay lip service to the line of scrimmage. Less now than they used to, but I still do. Control the line of scrimmage. Does the quarterback have a pocket or not? That's really what it comes down to. And the Cowboys invested year after year after year. I want to say 4 out of 5 years they had a first-round pick go to the offensive line. It was something crazy like that. And so they had the best one in the league. And here and there, like the Raiders 3 or 4 years ago would pop up. Oh, look, maybe their offensive line's the best in the league. No, year in and year out, it was the Cowboys. The other names of the teams changed who had the O-lines. But the Cowboys were there every year because year after year, they're drafting in the first round. Not like, yeah, we're devoting some resources second, third round. First round picks, and they had an all-pro front five, right? All-pro offensive line. Front five. I just made that up, Raj. Why not? Why not call the offensive line the front five? Anyway, that's gone. It's gone. Travis Frederick retired. You got your tackles both hurt. Zach Martin now hurt. These guys are all pros every year. All pro bowlers, they're gone. The offensive line isn't there anymore. So what does that mean? Well, they clearly devoted more resources to the offense than the defense. The defense, as we know, is nothing to write home about. In fact, they took CeeDee Lamb, who was the best receiver in the draft. When they had receivers, really, they probably should have beefed up the defense, but they didn't. So now what do they have? Bill Polian, the GM of the Bills, who built those great teams, and then the GM of the Colts, who built those great teams, once told me, not that long ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, that the running back makes the O-line. I totally disagree with him about it, but this guy has forgotten more football than I'll ever know, so he has a reason for saying that. I always think, no, the running back makes the line. The line makes the back and the quarterback and the offense, even helps your defense in a way. But he insisted the running back makes the line. Well, okay, I think this is some evidence to the contrary. The Cowboys' offensive line is gone, and they don't have a defense. You know what the offensive line being gone means? Ezekiel Elliott's not the same. Last couple of years, let's be honest, it's increasingly glaring. Not the same. Not running behind the best offensive line. Now he finds out how the other half lives, or how the other majority of football lives. Remember the Barry Sanders-Emmitt Smith debate? And what it all, you know, well, Barry Sanders will get you these huge plays, but you can't rely on him for those consistent gains, whereas Emmitt Smith can run between the tackles and just get you consistent gains. But people knew, like, come on, man, you could say all that, but put Barry Sanders behind Emmitt Smith's offensive line. Would we even be arguing? Rod, you're a Dallas Cowboys fan. Would there be an argument if Barry Sanders ran behind that Dallas line?
No, there wouldn't.
There would not be an argument.
I mean,
years later, Emmitt Smith's not the same thing. Put Saquon Barkley, when he's healthy, behind the Dallas offensive line of the last several years. See what happens. Now Ezekiel Elliott's finding out what Saquon Barkley and these guys have had to put up with. Not the same. And the quarterback, Dak Prescott, has more respect for me than ever before, because their offense, like, even if you thought, well, some of it's empty calories, they're playing catch up, but it was still an offense that was scoring a lot of points. Picking up a lot of yards, completing a lot of plays, scoring a lot of points. Behind no offensive line, and because of that, a compromised running back. And no defense. Well, you put Andy Dalton in, and he's rusty. I get it. Come on. He's rusty. But still, you put kind of like a pedestrian quarterback, a backup type, like a good backup in right now. And look what happens. You can't get anything going. So no O-line means no running back. And unless you have a really good quarterback, which Dak is, no quarterback, and it compromises your time of possession, and it does all kinds of stuff, Raj, which compromises your defense. That's what the Dallas Cowboys are dealing with. I think Andy Dalton's going to wind up winning some games because they have to play the rest of the NFC East five times now coming up. They have two games against Washington, and at least two against the Giants. Anyway, the point is they got winnable games coming up. But I'll tell you what. Andy Dalton's making Dak Prescott some money. Meantime, Tua Tagovailoa. Tua Tagovailoa. Why start him now? Jeff Saturday was on First Take asking that. Like, Fitzpatrick's been doing good. They're 500. Why are you starting Tua now? Now, my theory is Fitzpatrick's just good enough to be dangerous to your team. Fitzpatrick, you know, he can take over a team. You're like, oh my God, this is looking great. Look what he did for the Bucs a couple years ago, right? And you're looking at Jameis like, Jameis, a competent quarterback, comes in. They're scoring 40 points a game. What's wrong with you? But Fitzpatrick's not that guy in the long run. He can give you a little boost. He's not afraid to take chances. Probably a little too unafraid to take chances. And he's a competent quarterback. He's an excellent backup. He's a kind of low average starter sometimes, but good enough to make you think, yes, this is the guy, and then you wind up 6-10. And so I think the Dolphins look around and they go, okay, we got Tua on the rookie deal. So we have until the end of this rookie deal to really make hay, right? To really get something done. Because, you know, all that extra money is freed up for the rest of the team. So, you know, what do we want to do here? Well, you don't want to start him week one, especially with his injury history. But if the health checks out, and now you're 3-3, and you look around, you're like, team's pretty good. We're competing. And Fitzpatrick has done very well so far. But at 3-3, with no one running away with the division, maybe the time is now to make the switch. Like, if you get to the playoffs with Fitzpatrick, what do you think you're doing there? It ain't about this year. You're not going to win. And it ain't about next year. You haven't developed a quarterback. But if you have Tua in there, and he's really showing you something, especially, and the Patriots are 2-3 right now, and the Bills have potential, but they're not like a dominant team, you might mess around and make the playoffs. And even if you don't, the real improvement in NFL quarterbacks to begin their career happens in year two. That's when you see the real, the development happen. And you'd like that to be next year for Tua, because then you got a primetime quarterback in year three with several years left on his rookie deal to get something done in a division where there's instability in New England. We'll see what happens with Cam. Brady's gone. He left the cupboard bare. And the Bills, they're a good team, but that's not like, oh my God, the Bills are the greatest team you've ever seen. They're a good team. Good defense, ascending quarterback, good coach. I get it. I get why they make this move now. 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. You know, you go into the Monday night doubleheader thinking two competitive games, and it didn't turn out that way, but they were still entertaining. The Chiefs and the Bills, both coming off losses, both really needing wins. Remember, Casey Joyner, the football scientist, came on this show. Was that last week or early this week, Raj? I already forgot. But he was talking about how
it was Thursday.
That's what I said. As I said, Raj, Thursday. What's
the name? I'm sorry.
How could you not remember?
My bad.
The point is, he talked about how the Chiefs don't like shootouts. They're 5-4 over the last 2 years in shootouts, which is surprising. Really, the Chiefs don't like shootouts? But when you take a lot of shots down the field, you know, you would think in lower scoring games, that favors the less talented team. Because a single score, which could be a pass interference, a bad call, a lucky play, you know, can really change the outcome of a game. So I usually think with very talented teams playing lesser teams, the lesser team wants to keep the score as low as possible. Because then one score has a huge sway on the outcome of the game. But Casey Joyner was saying that, in fact, when you take a lot of shots, essentially, good things can happen for you. And those are not the kind of games that the Chiefs do really well in recently. It's weird because, remember back to the beginning, the introduction of Patrick Mahomes in 18. Patrick Mahomes in 2018, I think they went like 5-0 to start the season, something like that. But it was all high-scoring shootout games. And the whole thing was, don't get into a shootout with the Kansas City Chiefs. But you can see from the Chiefs' game plans, they don't want the shootout. Not that they can't win a shootout. I like them in a shootout, really, against any other team. The point is, according to Casey Joyner and the numbers and the games, right? They're 5-4 now in the last 2 years in high-scoring games. It gives the other team a puncher's chance. And you could see in the Kansas City game plan, when they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is it Helaire? Am I supposed to not even pronounce the H at all? Anyway, when they drafted him, the idea was he's this dynamic running back, a pass catcher out of the backfield that's going to help in the passing game, as though they need much more help there, as much as on the ground. But in fact, they use him to control the clock, to kind of control the game score. 26-17. That's not the kind, like 26-17, and the star of the game is the running back, who's supposed to be this dynamic pass catcher, but is used for basically ball control. It's one of the reasons, by the way, they ran the ball more than they threw it. This is only the second time in Mahomes' career that they ran the ball more than they threw it. Imagine having Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And your running backs are Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and now you're adding Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell has split him out wide. You put him anywhere. And having all those weapons and this insane quarterback, who as a rookie threw 50 touchdowns to 12 interceptions, won the MVP, should have won the Super Bowl, and the next year wins the Super Bowl and Super Bowl MVP with three consecutive playoff comebacks of double digits, you know, down by double digits, right? You have that talent under center, all those offensive weapons in the passing game, and you're like, nah, we're going to run the ball. And you do it successfully, that actually gives you the best chance to win. It's a nightmare for the rest of the league because let's say you're like, no, we're going to counteract that strategy. We're going to make them beat us with the passing game. Okay. You're going to make the Kansas City Chiefs rely on Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. All right. You know, that's their fallback plan. Oof. It's also the reason, though, why I think the Patriots... I'm assuming Cam Newton gets it together because he looked good early in the season. Then he struggled a little in a win. Then he got COVID. He didn't play. And then he looked bad this last week. But assuming Cam can get it together as the season goes on, I think Cam is an excellent player. I can't believe that's something I still have. I think Cam's actually good. I like the Patriots as their biggest challenger, as their greatest threat. Belichick coaches very well against everyone. Particularly, though, he seems to give the Chiefs problems. And Andy Reid, look at their history, and Patrick Mahomes. And when you think about what the Chiefs are trying to do, like, Belichick will play a lot more defensive backs than another coach might. He won't. If you look at the defensive packages, sometimes six defensive backs on the field, right? Speed. So he covers guys. And it would seem encourages the Chiefs to kind of play the game the Chiefs want to play. But do you want to play that game against the Patriots? Well, in any kind of game, I favor the Chiefs over the Patriots. But at least Belichick, a strength of his team, plays into the kind of way that the Chiefs seem to want to play. Now, I believe when push comes to shove, fine, the Chiefs, you wanted to dare Mahomes to air it out and beat you and beat your coverage and all that? I think he can. But I do think they present the biggest... I think the Patriots, because of Belichick, presuming that Cam gets it together, present the biggest problem. That's a good game. You see it up on the screen right now. In the AFC, top four teams all playing each other. Chiefs just played the Bills. Steelers about to play the Titans. I'm going to get into that in my power rankings coming up. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Here's Patrick Mahomes on the run game of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we had a few more pass plays called. I mean, we always do. But, I mean, once we saw that how deep their linebackers and safeties and corners were playing, we knew that we had the run. We had the run game. And so we really just stayed with it. And if teams are going to play us like this, you're going to see us running the football, and we have the guys that can do it.
It's almost like it stands to reason that's like, yeah, the Chiefs want to pass the ball. But if Casey Joyner is right and the numbers bear him out, it's not even the best way for them to play. So it's almost like Andy Reid is fielding a team where your best chance is to take away the thing they do best, which is obviously with Patrick Mahomes under center and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and running backs who can catch, which is obviously throw the ball. But it's almost like Brer Rabbit, right? Don't throw me in that briar patch. So like they're daring you just with their personnel to give them the run. And then they run. they got the horses to do it. Keith in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. Appreciate you taking the call. Look, to me, this is about Kellen Moore as a play caller. And let me explain. This is about identity. They made Ezekiel Elliott the highest paid running back in the league. For years, they were a run first offense, play action, which Dak Prescott's very good at, and then you rush the passer when you get the lead. Ever since he took over, if you go back and look at the stats, Ezekiel Elliott, even in close games, would get 15 to 18 rushing attempts a game. mm-hmm. and they throw the ball 40 to 45 times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a winning formula in the NFL, and it's especially not a winning formula for the Dallas Cowboys. So you have to have an identity, and he's the issue. When he took over, I don't remember when it was, but when he
when
took
you say
over
he, who do you mean? Kellen Moore is the play call. Although Jason Garrett, did you see this decision that Joe Judge and Jason Garrett made in the Giants game? Up 13-10, 4th-and-2 from the Washington 38, they punted. I mean, you know, like you talk about play calling, that's no great shakes. And I've seen Garrett as head coach punt in situations, in short yardage situations, when he had Ezekiel Elliott. And I'm like, what are you kidding? So like, when you say identity, what do you mean? You want Zeke to get the ball more?
They should be a run-first team. That should be.
But you can't do it if you can't run block. Like their offensive line, forget about the proportion of run to throw to pass to and play action number of like percentage of play action calls and everything. I don't know why everyone doesn't run play action all the time. It seems to be better than not doing it. But forget about all that. All those things on offense are possible. When 4 out of the 5 guys on your line are perennial Pro Bowlers, they're all gone. They don't have them anymore. I mean, they'll get a couple back, but as of right now, their center's gone, both tackles are gone, and a guard is gone. They're best players. They're first-round picks. They're not there. So the run blocking's not the same. The pass protection's not the same. Nothing's the same. And what you saw last night, what Andy Dalton highlighted, was how much of that Dak Prescott was covering up for them. Dalton just made Dak some money. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Keith just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line.
The Los Angeles Dodgers are headed to the World Series.
I mean, it's Clayton Kershaw. We know he's going to be prepared. He's going to go out and compete and give us a chance to win a ball game like he always does.
Yeah, I'm going to prepare like I always do and be as ready as I can be and excited about another opportunity to get it done.
We're in the World Series right now, and Clayton Kershaw wants to make his mark here.
To be able to win a World Series after all this would be just as special as any other one for sure.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. The Los Angeles Dodgers and Tampa Bay Rays are breaking moves, sending Tyler Glasnow and Clayton Kershaw to the hill for Game 1 of the World Series. ESPN Radio is your home for every pitch of the World Series. Tune in today at 7:30 p.m. Eastern for Game 1 of the Dodgers-Rays on ESPN Radio. And now we pause, Raj, for some imaging.
Breaking news is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
Here's the thing about Clayton Kershaw. I take no pleasure in killing him about choking. I hate it. Do you understand? Clayton Kershaw, like, Steve Carlton, let's talk about the greatest left-handed starting pitchers in the history of baseball. Steve Carlton and Randy Johnson are two of them, certainly over their career, and their peaks match anyone's peaks. But both Johnson and Carlton would have these amazing all-time years followed by good years, like very good years by anyone else's standards, but not quite Cy Young level or, you know, top three or four Cy Young, but really good. Have a couple of those, and then another amazing year in different patches of their careers where they seem to rediscover themselves and reach new heights and everything, and they did it for so long. So the quality of their prime and their longevity is greater than, say, so far, Clayton Kershaw's or Sandy Koufax's, right? But the thing that Koufax and Clayton Kershaw did, and by the way, I'll say Johan Santana, too. People don't realize that, like, I'm looking for a chunk of years, right? Like, right in the middle of their career, 3, 4, 5 years, where they're the dominant pitcher, where they're winning the Cy Young or almost doing it every single year, right? Johan Santana did that. Johan Santana led the league in ERA 3 or 4 years out of 4 years or something like that. He was like, you know, but Kershaw was even better. Kershaw, in the middle of his career, from 2011 to 2014, well, listen to his finishes in the Cy Young race, okay? He won, I'll do it like this. He won 3 Cy Young awards in 4 seasons, okay? 1 year, he led the league in games started, okay? So he didn't miss any turns in the rotation. Bunch of guys tied for that, right? He led the league in WHIP, walks and hits to innings pitched, meaning he gave up fewer base runners per inning than anyone in the league, period. He led the league, or WHIP, don't give me this fancy WHIP stuff, you know. What he led the league in ERA plus, so you adjust for ballpark and all that stuff, and he was the best pitcher. Oh, no, it's still too fancy. How about ERA? Because he led the league in that, too. That was the year he didn't win the Cy Young. He came in second. The three other years he won. So he should have probably won the Cy Young that year. He probably should have won four in a row. He won three out of four. So few pitchers who ever lived ever did anything like that. Koufax is one of them. And then Kershaw wasn't done, by the way. Because the next couple of years, he finished, where did he finish? Third and fifth. Fifth because he got hurt. But just so you know, 2.13 ERA and a 1.69 ERA. Finished third and fifth. And when he had the 2.13, he tied for league lead in games started. He led the league in complete games and shutouts, in innings pitched, in strikeouts, in fielding independent percentage, meaning when you take defense out of it, you just see like what you would expect the ERA to be, right? Based on his other numbers, he was actually the best there too. And strikeouts per nine, came in third in the Cy Young vote. He could have easily won the Cy Young there too. So what are we up to? 5 years? You could have argued he deserved five straight Cy Youngs as it was. Got three, a two, and a third place finish. A second and a third place finish. And then inning for inning was as good as anyone in 2016, but missed a bunch of starts, so he finished fifth. And then in 2017, led the league in wins and ERA and ERA plus. And finished second in the league, and he, in Cy Young, could have won there too. Like, you could argue he should have six Cy Young awards. As it is, he has three first-place finishes, two seconds, and a third in 6 years. You know how great that is? He should be in a category with five or six pitchers in the history of baseball. Sandy Koufax, Walter Johnson, Lefty Grove. Like, a couple of guys. But he's not. He's not, because Clayton Kershaw, in the regular season, has a lifetime ERA of 2.43. I just want you to understand, in this offensive era, his lifetime ERA as a starting pitcher is 2.43. That'll win you the Cy Young most years if you know, pitch a bunch of innings, as he does, and strike out a bunch of guys like he does. Pitches in a major market, has an offense, the whole thing, tons of wins. His winning percentage, by the way, 6.97, is that the highest all time for a guy with it? Like, it's way, way up there. Here's the problem. His postseason resume. And everyone knows it, but do you know how bad it is? In nine National League Division Series, NLDS, he has a 4.02 ERA. 4.02. So from 2.43, which is so insanely good for a career ERA with a guy with this many innings pitched, it's like unthinkable. He goes to 4.02. Well, that's thinkable, isn't it? NLCS, so now you're one stage later, 4.84. Now you're not even a good starting pitcher. That's not a good starting pitcher. 4.02, you can say, okay, well, you're facing better hitters and everything. 4.84 under any circumstances in any era is a bad starting pitcher. And in the World Series, smallest sample size, but he started four games in the World Series, 5.40. He stinks. And that's why the Dodgers haven't won. In 1981, Fernando Valenzuela was the ace of the Dodgers staff. He was this 20-year-old phenom, and he was lights out in the playoffs. They won the World Series. In the World Series, he had like a game where he gave up four runs, but it was over nine innings. He struck out a bunch of guys, and they won the game. That was his worst start. In 1988, Oral Hershiser, the ace of the staff. Remember, he won the Cy Young in 88, but for most of that year, Danny Jackson was supposed to win. Was traded from the Royals to the Reds, and he had a bunch of wins. Or David Cone was supposed to win. He was crazy, but Hershiser just stopped giving up runs at a certain point. But how would he pitch under pressure? He broke Whitey Ford. I believe he broke Whitey Ford's consecutive scoreless innings pitched in the World Series. Okay? Whitey Ford broke Babe Ruth's record as a pitcher to do it. He put his name in the record books of, like, the greatest of all time. And that's why the Dodgers won, because their ace was the best version of himself when they needed it to be. So they won in 81. They won in 88. They had Valenzuela. They had Oral Hershiser. Now they have Clayton Kershaw. And he's better than Hershiser or Valenzuela ever were until it matters most. Then they were studs and he's been a dud. Come on, Clayton. Yet another chance. Game one. It's not game seven. You haven't pitched twice already in the series. It's game one. Please. At least give him a five and dive with two runs allowed. Do me a favor. Give up three runs in five innings, but so it's a tie game in the eighth inning, or please let the Dodgers win so I can come on this show tomorrow and not kill you. His name belongs with the greatest of all time, like Koufax. But Koufax in the World Series in over 40 innings pitched 0.95 ERA. That's why the Dodgers would win World Series. Koufax, Valenzuela, Hershiser, big game pitchers. That has not been Clayton Kershaw. I would love for him to turn that around. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You know, growing up, I used to hear these radio announcers, and they had these mellifluous voices. I thought they were doing it on purpose. You know what happens, Rog? You talk so much, your vocal cords get loose.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I start to read something, I sound like, real cheesy, like I'm trying to put on a radio voice. It just happens after a while. That's right. Season 2 of the ESPN Investigates podcast is now available. The Running Man tells the story of an obscure former Olympian, an alleged serial sexual predator, and how a 14-month ESPN investigation brought him out of the shadows. More than 50 men were physically abused and mentally manipulated by their coach, quote-unquote, for over 40 years, until they banded together decades later to find justice. Subscribe and listen now to ESPN Investigates wherever you get your podcasts.
Max.
So they're going to ask me questions, huh, Raj?
Yeah, that's how it goes. Just on the phone lines. Just call up and ask Max.
888-SAY-ESPN. Jeff in Cleveland, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. What you got to ask me?
Hey, Max, how you doing? I'd like to know why Letterman's daughter is allowed to judge fights.
Julie Letterman has had an excellent career. She had a bad night. Have you disagreed with a lot of her cards?
I'm not aware of a lot of her cards, but I am aware of lopsided and incorrect judging.
Well, let's put it this way.
That was a classic example.
Let's put it this way. You could make the argument that Lopez won 1 through 6, although many would say that Lomachenko won the second round. But see, what happens is, and I disagree with Julie's card, I think at best you can say it's an 8-4 fight for Lopez. And you could have had it as close as 6-6. You could not have had Lomachenko winning. So I don't want to get too hung up on the judges because the right guy won. Like, if you have a range of 6-6 to 8-4, then you would expect maybe a majority decision win for Lopez. One judge has it 6-6, one has it 7-5, one has it 8-4. That would be like a perfect distribution of scores. However, if 1 through 6 is Lopez, and Lomachenko really came on in rounds 8, because 7 could have also gone to Lopez. You can give it to Lomachenko, you could also give 7 to Lopez. So 1 through 7 might be Lopez, and the 12th was also Lopez. So the rounds in question where it's tough to give to Lopez that Lomachenko won are 8, 9, 10, and 11. Those are 4 rounds. Is it possible that Julie Letterman was sitting on a side of the ring where one guy or another's back was to her and it was hard to see some shots? And given the fact that Lopez seemed to be winning round after round after round, even though the momentum shifted, see, a judge has to be wary of this. One fighter is winning round after round after round. Another fighter, the fighter A, is winning all the rounds. Fighter B has a better round than he's had. And so the natural human nature is to notice the shift in momentum and give the round to fighter B. But a trained judge has more discipline than that. And they think, nope, I know fighter B did better, but they still didn't win the round. Right? They're on guard for that. And if you're sitting on a side of the judge because there's the ring, because there's one judge on three different sides of the ring, and you're sitting on a side of the ring where your view is obscured, and you're on guard for not just giving the shift in momentum rounds, and there are really only 4 rounds that Lomachenko won clean, Maybe in three of them, she didn't have a good enough view. It's possible. She's had an excellent career. I think she had a bad card. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Jeff just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. I'm going to take a bunch more calls in the next segment, Raj. I'm threatening to do it. 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. Disaster in Big D, the Max Kellerman Show.